Blog Talk Radio.
This program is sponsored by P2P Muscles, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on, as well as a vehicle to drive your goals, check us out at P4PMuscle.com. And now let's talk. Happy Thursday. I am Desiree Fletcher, and he is Kalen Patterson, and together we are P4P Real Talk. How are you doing, Kalen?
Happy New Year again.
Happy New Year again. So in case you guys missed it, this Tuesday, we had Kareem Petaway on the show, and he was discussing some major changes that were coming down the pike in the natural competitive world that were impacting the IFPA, the OCD, the WPA, which is a new organization, the World Physique Association, and just a lot of, you know, misconceptions that were out there, and just more insight into, you know, new things that were coming onto the scene. And great show, great conversation, a lot of great feedback from you guys out there. And as promised, we said that if we did get some additional questions coming in, that we would answer them on this show tonight. And we just happen to have some more questions. And Kalen, I'm going to turn it over to you to share that Q&A with us.
Okay, well, you know, as everyone that listened was privy to, they had a Kareem pretty much, Remo covered everything that he did, and he did it really well. He went in depth with everything he had to say, but there were still some that, you know, because it's now a long show, that there were some that were missed and not overlooked just or oversight. It was just missed, you know, because we basically ran out of time. And one of those was the difference. Since the Yorton is staying in the WNBF, that it's going to there, what was going to be the big show for the IFPA? And that show is going to be in Kansas now. And that date will be set according to the IFPA schedule. Remo said he's going to be putting out all the information soon, if not out right now. And the other one was basically, would it still be open? Would the Yorton still be open to the IFPA competitors? And that is, yes, it would be. And the other ones are pretty much, like he said, having to be worked out. So if everyone could please just go to the website that he had spoken of, or just stay tuned with Midwest Muscle or P4P, and we'll be posting all that information as soon as we get it.
Yep, and that's a great point. So do continue to visit the IFPA website, you know, Midwest Muscle Facebook page, and then also the WPA site, and they will continue to post information there. But, you know, just a lot of traffic, a lot of interested parties, so just really great. Glad to see all of the interest out there and folks just trying to, you know, stay in tune with what their opportunities are going to be over this next year and in the future. So, you know, I was really happy to see the response that came back from Tuesday's show.
Yeah, it was pretty nice.
It was. So keep it up, folks, and we definitely want to continue to hear from you. So whether, you know, it's more questions about that segment or anything, if there's a topic that you would like us to cover that you want to hear more about, do drop us a line and we would do our best to bring on the guest to address the areas that you want to hear more about. And with that being said, I want to go ahead and introduce our guest that we have tonight, and very excited to have her. We've actually been chasing her for about a year to try and get her on the show. With her very busy schedule, she's a singer, she is an entertainer on a cruise ship, and her job just takes her everywhere around the world for months at a time. And so it's kind of crazy that she's even found time to continue to be a natural bodybuilder competitor in the midst of all of that, but she has, and that she being Sarah Stallman. Sarah, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm good. How are you guys?
We are awesome. Even better now that we're talking to you. So I have given just a little brief mini glimpse into the life of Sarah Spellman, but why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, what you do, and just a little brief background into, you know, how you got started into competing on the natural bodybuilding scene.
Sure. Well, like you guys said, I've been working as a singer. I've been working professionally as a singer for the past almost 4 years now. I started out working for Holland America Cruise Line. I did a cruise with them going to Hawaii and Mexico for about 7 months. After that, I worked for Universal Studios Singapore. I signed a contract with them for 13 months. So got to spend a year in Southeast Asia, which was something I never thought I would do, but it was an amazing experience, and I'm so glad and so blessed that I was able to do that. After I did that, I came back home, and I started with Carnival Cruise Lines, and I had been with them for the past year. I did two contracts with them, one out of California down to Mexico, and I just finished one recently out of Florida that went down to the Bahamas. So got a little sun down there, which was good.
Yeah, I'm sure that was just a terrible sense.
I know, something we all sorely missed right now, I'm sure. But yeah, so that's kind of my work background. I'm from Des Moines, born and bred. I actually grew up in Granger, little bitty town up north of Des Moines. Went to high school in Des Moines and everything, college down at Truman State University, got my degree in music and theater. So that's sort of my background there. As far as the bodybuilding side of things, basically I started exercising a little bit more once I got out of college because I knew that if I wanted to sort of be seen for a lot of the types of jobs that I wanted, I wasn't overweight by any means, but I was not in shape at all. And so I really started to try to buckle down and, you know, started going for runs and sort of watching what I ate. And that got me a little bit further, you know, started booking jobs. And then, you know, when I got into my, well, right before I got into my first cruise gig, I started getting into some light weightlifting and fell in love with it, you know. It was a lot of lightweight, high rep type of stuff, which, you know, I wouldn't really do now, but it was a good introduction to it at the time. And so then once I started working on the cruise ship, I kept training, you know, sort of in that way. And then I had saw a friend of mine had started competing, and I saw all of her pictures and her Pinterest boards, as inspirational and influential as those are. And, you know, I kind of thought to myself, I'd like to kind of see, you know, if I could do that. And so I started lifting a little heavier. And even though I was working at the time, but I was working as just a singer. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a singer dancer by any means. So I actually wasn't really like burning a lot in my job. So I really wanted to make an effort to make up for it outside of work and go to the gym more. So, yeah, and so at the end of that first cruise ship contract, I decided, yep, I'm going to compete. There's a show in Des Moines, and I'm going to make that sort of my end goal. I did the diet and everything on the ship, which if you talk to anybody who's been on a cruise ship, tell you that if you can do it there, you can do it anywhere.
I am into that. The cruise ship where you can eat anything that you want 24/7.
Yeah. You know, so it can be done. I refuse to believe that it cannot. So, yeah, I did it. Did it while I was on the ship, despite all that, and came back. I did two shows in Des Moines then that summer. That was 2013. I did the NANBF show in Des Moines, and then I did the NGA Titan Classic in Urbandale, which of course I know. Of course, I know where I met Desiree and Kaylin.
Yes,
that was a good time. So yeah, I came back, did those shows, left for Singapore, and because I was sort of still in competition mode, I decided to seek out a trainer while I was in Singapore. Because I was having trouble sort of adjusting to this new,
everything.
Right?
Everything.
Not only is it a different, not only culture, you know, it's a the food and the way they eat and everything and body image is all completely different. I mean,
so,
it was a 180,
so let's stop and
you know.
Talk
and,
about that for a second. Now,
yeah.
When you just said body image is completely different over, I mean, how is that different? Or what's their perception of body image versus to what you're used to coming from the States?
Yeah, it was really interesting because I noticed, in at least this is coming obviously just from my perspective, all I knew, you know, was the American style of bodybuilding and, you know, our mentality of working out and all that kind of thing. Going over there, it was way less common to see women in the weight room. I mean,
okay.
Way less common. It was very cardio heavy. I mean, it was sort of that, what you think of when you think, oh, all the girls on the treadmills, that was kind of what it was there. And it just wasn't a thing. It really wasn't a thing for women to lift. And instead it was kind of more just about being slender, that, you know, that's a bit more of what the emphasis is on. But there are a few, you know, there are a few women that are into, some weightlifting and things like that. It's just much, much fewer and farther between than it is here.
So how did you go about then? I mean, so you were still, like you said, in competition mode, and I actually remember you from both of those shows because I was in both of those shows, and those were my first two shows also.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, throwback Thursday there, and then
yeah.
So you're still in competition mode. You're going over to a new country. You've got a new job, new roommate, new language, new lifestyle, new everything. Nothing, you know, familiar around you whatsoever. But you decide, okay, I still want to continue this lifestyle and still participate in this sport. So, I mean, did you learn of a show and then decide to get a coach? Or, I mean, how what prompted you to find a coach and how did you find one?
Well, I wasn't planning on competing while I was there. You know, I was there for my job, and my job was full on. You know, it was full schedule, you know, and very intense. The show we did was very, very, it was basically straight up cardio for 15 minutes straight without stopping three or four times a day, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it really adds up. Anyway, the way it came about was, so I got there and I sort of went, you know, into a little bit of shock. You know, I'm looking around and everything is white rice and I couldn't find any like white meat chicken. And I was just like, my brain did not know what to do. So, I mean, you can imagine. I'm like, why are there so many cars?
I bet. Looking at a grocery store and you're like, what do I do now?
Well, it didn't help. The first month we were there, we were living out of a hotel, so that certainly didn't help by any means. No grocery stores or anything really around. But so I was still – I wanted to maintain this lifestyle that I had started, you know, because I felt great. I was really happy with the shows, you know, here. And I wanted to keep that going, but I'm looking around and it just seems like nobody is there that understands sort of where I'm coming from. So I just, I literally just went online and like Googled Singapore female trainer, bodybuilder, something like that. I was like, is there anybody here, anybody that can kind of relate to me on this level of having been a competitor? And lo and behold, I ended up finding Joan Liu, who she's Singaporean, she's born and raised there. She is a proper bodybuilder, now does women's physique. She's competed all over the world, in Asia and in the States. And so I reached out to her. She had a private gym, and so I just reached out to them initially with the idea of just trying to get some guidance as to how to even do this in Singapore. You know, I wasn't planning on signing up for anything. I just wanted some of their time. And so I sat down and talked with her business partner, Augustine Lee, who is also a bodybuilder, professional, been doing it for years, again, internationally, and sat down and talked with him for a bit. And he basically sort of convinced me to start training with them. And I was fortunately able to do that at the time. You know, I had the means to do that. So I went ahead and signed up, and I started training with these, you know, like I said, international professional bodybuilders, which is something I never, ever thought I would do.
And I remember, like, we were messaging, and you were saying how you're going to do this show, and then you started posting about it, you know, on social media, and everybody was just so pumped for you. Because we were all living vicariously through you. Like you said, you're now training with these international bodybuilding, you know, competitors, now coaches. But the craziest thing about it, and the part that, you know, I think it's important is you had a mad, crazy schedule on top of everything else going on. I mean, so just talk a little bit about the show you were there for, because I know you were doing two-a-days in rehearsals, and then you were performing multiple shows in a day, and, you know, and it's not like you can just go to the grocery store on the corner whenever you need to. I mean, everything that you were faced with, it was a concerted effort. How did you pull all that together?
All right, I'm going to do my best to not ramble, like, drag that out too long. There's a lot to say about that. Basically, yeah, my job, the show I was doing, it was called Monster Rock, and like I said, it was, we did three shows a day, sometimes four shows a day. It was about 15, 20 minutes long, and full-on cardio. So the advantage was I didn't do any extra cardio while I was there. Hardly ever, because my job had me more than covered. I was getting paid to do my cardio, as far as I was concerned. So, we would work 5 to 6 days a week usually, and it was about 10 a.m. till, I want to say, 6 p.m. usually. So it wasn't too hard to either get up and go before work or go after work. I usually went after, and I would go to my trainer's gym and train with them about once a week. And then the rest of the week I would just go to, we had a gym membership as part of our job. So I would just go and use that one. But so it wasn't actually too hard to find the time per se. It was just staying motivated to keep going, even when you've done, you know, a long day at work and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, so yeah. And then as far as like the, you know, finding time for the food and everything, I full on embrace the local supermarket. I know not every Westerner I knew there was doing that, but it was cheaper, you know, and they did have, the thing to remember, seafood is huge there. So I had, seafood was cheap, much cheaper than it is here. So that was a really nice thing to have. I could get tilapia and all that for a decent price. Chicken breast and such was sometimes harder to find, which I applaud them for using every part of the animal. I think that's amazing, but for my purposes, I was like, I don't need a cat. A cow tongue isn't going to do me a lot of good right now. I'm going to need to find your chicken somewhere.
I don't think that's on the leanest protein list.
No, I don't think so.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I've never checked that one out.
I didn't try.
A local grocery store every now and again.
But, you know, hey, that's what they had there, and that's cool. It's, you know, I'm, as far as my philosophy on food, I think it's great that you guys do that, but I need to find what, you know, is suitable for my needs right now. So I'm glad you all find
out. I'm enjoying this a little
funny
too
as you do. He's dying over there.
I don't know what's going on. We have those moments.
He's losing it.
Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of is the long and short of it, really. So it was a lot of work. I wouldn't say it was, I guess, easy by any means, but you know, I had enough. I just wanted it in my life, and so I guess when you, you know, have that desire to make it part of your life, it doesn't seem, you know, too overwhelming, you know, or like a lot of extra work, I suppose. So
yeah, and I think that's amazing. Yeah. Part. I mean, just what you said, you wanted it in your life, and you did what you needed to do to achieve your goals. I mean, to go after what you wanted. So
yeah,
I think that's awesome.
That's one of my favorite things about bodybuilding is it teaches you discipline, and it, you know, it kind of carries over to all parts of your life, I think, too.
Agree.
Yeah, I would totally agree. So now you also had one more change, as if everything else you're going through wasn't enough. But so when you started competing, you started in bikini. And so that's how we met, because we were on stage together, even though you're like, I feel like a foot taller than I am, but we were still in the same class a couple of times, however that happened. But then you switched it up, because I don't think they didn't necessarily have the bikini category, did they? Or you were competing in figure or physique, one of the two, right?
Well, yeah, their setup is totally different. So yeah, when I did the shows here, I did bikini, mostly just because it was my first shows, and that's kind of a good place to start, right? Even though in my mind I was like, oh, I'd love to do figure someday. That was sort of the goal. Well, then when I got there, the way they separate it is similar. They have model physique, which would be like our bikini, athletic physique,
okay,
which is more like figure, and then women's bodybuilding, which is, you know, pretty much the same, or physique, as they call it now. It actually wasn't too terribly different, but the main difference was here in the States, or in particular, there's a pretty much a standard across the board. I mean, well, I guess that's debatable, but you know, depending on which organization you're in, like, you know basically what is being looked for. There's generally some kind of standard. Whereas, because it's such a new sport there, it was a little harder to really kind of figure out what was favorable. Are we looking for more size? Are we looking for more conditioning? You know, what's the kind of goal here? And my trainers and I both, you know, we talked about it quite a bit, and they'd competed in the States, and they really liked the way we do it here, and they kind of wish, I think, it would be like that everywhere. So that was kind of the biggest challenge. You know, I wanted to do athletic because that was, like I said, that was kind of more my mental goal, was to kind of get up into that echelon. And I don't know if I really quite had the muscle, you know, size for it at the time, but I was conditioned, that's for sure. That job sure kept me between doing my job and still training 5-6 days a week. Yeah, conditioning was not a problem, needless to say. But it wasn't terribly different in that way.
And so did you get a chance to then talk to the judges following the show and just get more of their comments about, you know, your performance as compared to other athletes? Or, I mean, how, what were some of the other differences that you experienced between competing in the U.S. and competing in Singapore?
Well, we didn't get any feedback from the judges. That was one of the things I remembered really liking here. I don't remember which show it was, or maybe it was both, where you get some, like, on paper, you know, some at least numbers or comments or whatever, and that was helpful. You know, I think that's helpful to help you know what to work on for the next time around. But no, we didn't get anything like that there, so it was just kind of, I basically put all my trust in my trainers, because they came and watched both the shows that I did, and so I just tried to listen to them. Basically, I trusted their opinions. It was interesting when I did. So the second show that I did was the Southeast Asia Regional Championships, which sounds pretty hoity-toity of me to say, but that's what it was. So that one was a little bit different, though, because I was representing Singapore, essentially, and which is kind of ironic in and of itself. But because I was representing Singapore, I was on the Singapore team, and they had check-ins like every 4 weeks, maybe within the 2 or 3 months leading up to it. They would have a check-in. They would do your posing and kind of say, you know, work on this, try this pose, whatever it may be. They had a team, like, leader, supervisor, who was always there and giving some feedback. Now, the feedback I got wasn't always on par with what I was getting from my trainers, so it got a little frustrating sometimes. But, you know, I was there to support them, be a part of their team, and so I wanted to, you know, take everything that they said into account. And it was just very interesting. I was like, is this just like to be in, you know, the Olympics? Like, I feel I'm like representing my team, you know, and my country, this country, and that's kind of what it felt like. And it was really bizarre because, you know, here when you compete, I mean, even if when you compete here, you're doing it as an individual. And even if you are part of a sponsored brand or team or what have you, I guess I don't really know exactly how all that works because I haven't done that here, but it still seems pretty individualistic here in that sense. I don't know if that makes any sense what I'm saying. So that was kind of the main difference with that. That was the big show that I did over there. So that was really interesting to go through, to be with all the other athletes that you're sort of in cahoots with, you know, coming into this show. And it was cool though, because you kind of got to know people and sort of, you felt like there was this sort of bond, you know, all going into it all together.
Well, Sarah, I got a couple of questions because there's something, you know, because I've been blessed to be overseas, and a lot of times just dealing with the culture is enough to have your head spinning on its end. And then when you talk about the local diet, that's something else, because you're not guaranteed to make it to the toilet on time sometimes, you know, because yeah, that's a challenge in itself. Now, when you've got all of that going on and dealing with the culture, and there's a different mindset, you know, especially, you know, when it comes to that region and basically even how you dress, I appreciate your humble nature about it, but it had to be quite a challenge.
Yeah, it was. I was very lucky to be in Singapore in particular, though, because there it's very westernized. Like, it's such a business hub that they have a lot of Europeans, a lot of Australians, things like that. And so English is kind of the primary language. So in that regard, it wasn't so bad, which I was really grateful for. But like you said, still the food and everything, yeah, very different. And I'm glad my coaches were there to sort of tell me, you know, they laid out a meal plan for me, so I knew I could just go to the local grocery store and they knew I would be able to find those things there. And it wasn't, like I said, it ended up being pretty similar to here. It was just a matter of knowing how to seek it out, you know, because when you first arrive there, it looks very much more daunting. but once you sort of figure it out, it's actually, it wasn't too bad. I don't remember what else you asked.
No, I didn't ask you yet. I was giving you time for that when I was going to ask this. I had a chance to work with Chris Medina, and one of the things that he was really specific on, and it's something you had touched on, is that good health piggybacks singing and dancing and everything else. And that was his thing when he said he was overseas and had just tried to walk from one side of the stage to the other. And he was like, man, I'm really getting in bad shape from enjoying the good life, you know. And then to have to think about his health concerns really kind of hooked him right there. He said that was the moment of clarity for him where he said this is something that's got to be driving on both sides. It's mm-hmm. absolutely something you can forget about.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't quite catch all of that. But sorry, so what was the lead-in to that?
Oh, the lead-in to that is about never getting too far away from good health and fitness because it's basically part of your life.
Yeah, yeah. That was – so it kind of all ties back to why I got started in the first place, and I think it's part of what made it easier for me. So when I first was looking, you know, at the Pinterest boards and reading all these articles about competing, you know, it was very eye-opening to me. And because I had never really thought about my diet in the way that bodybuilding presented it in terms mm-hmm. of really trying to hold fast to whole foods, you know, grains and vegetables and meat. You know, it's pretty basic stuff. And so, especially being on the ship, you know, I'm looking at all the options. That was one of the good things. You see all the options. They're all right there in front of you, and you can make a decision
oh, yeah.
as to what you want, you know. And so it got to a point where they knew exactly what I was going to order every single day. Egg white omelet in the morning, you know, with my oatmeal, and then always come through the salad bar, always ask for the chicken breast from the rotisserie. You know, they knew me by that point. But I remember when I was doing that, and people were kind of looking at me like, how are you doing that? You know, like, how are you able to, them it was restrictive. But mm-hmm. to me, I was like, this feels right. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like the food that, you know, the earth is giving you, and you're eating it like the way it's sort of meant to be in my mind.
Yes.
And I thought there was just something really liberating about that and really cool. And it, you know, lo and behold, of course, made me feel a lot better, you know, physically, and which then in turn made me feel better mentally. And with my training, you know, I was feeling pretty on point, and I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. This just makes sense to me to look at food this way. And so then when I was in a new culture and everything, like I said, I mean, I was kind of joking, but I'm very serious that, you know, I really applaud, especially Asian culture for keeping their food very simple. And it's actually very wholesome in most ways. You know, they don't, it's not a lot of processing. It's, and, you know, not like we do here. And my food philosophy actually kind of fit in pretty well over there, which was one of the reasons why, even though at first it was shocking, after I had been around it, it wasn't so bad. And, mm-hmm. I knew mm-hmm. I wanted to still eat that way. Of course, what I was eating was more, well, I guess I'll say restrictive. I really don't like that word, but it was more restricted than what they ate, right?
Guided.
I pretty much stuck to the same things, yeah. So,
yep.
So yeah, the philosophy was actually, to me, pretty similar. It's just that they prepared their foods, used different ingredients than I was wanting
yeah.
to use.
But it's a lot more on point with the natural competitor's diet. You
mm-hmm.
can't even, like, try to make it different too much because it's so more whole food, agriculture. It's so much organic based, it's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
and, you know, this whole – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go. You're good.
Oh, I was just going to say, this whole conversation actually reminds me that you are a foodie.
Oh, yeah.
You spend a lot of time actually experimenting with, and I laugh because in our world, you do see a lot of people coming up with, you know, this protein recipe, that protein recipe, and I'm sitting on this end and saying, well, what the heck, a protein pancake, what is it you guys got going on? But you make a lot of clean, or you experiment in making cleaner desserts, or, you know, just different dishes that fit in with your lifestyle. And
yeah,
I had actually forgotten about that a little bit.
Well, so growing up, I was always into food. I was in 4-H, and the one project area that I did all, I don't even remember how many years I was in it, 8, 9 something years, I did food competition every year. And then towards the end of that, I even entered at the state fair. And those were not healthy, necessarily, dishes. But it was you know, unless cakes and breads and things and cookies count. But, you know, it was a good way to learn, you know, how to make your own food. It was still a very informative life skill to have. And so then when I kind of got into, you know, this side of things, I was like, well, let me try to mess around with this and let me kind of see, do you have to use all of these high fat, high sugar, you know, ingredients, or can you try something else that maybe is a little bit, and of course, anytime, especially with desserts, even if you're making a quote unquote healthy or high protein version, it's still, you know, the goodness of it is still not as good, you know, as a whole food, right? But hey, you can't fault a girl for trying, okay? So
no, you sure can't.
But yeah,
I'm
but then
right with you.
So with that, I got more into cooking and everything as well. And that was one of the things that I brought back that I loved about being in Asia was you could take something simple like shrimp or whatever, something pretty clean, and just add like spice to it. And it's amazingly flavorful. You know, you don't have to add a bunch of fatty things to it or sugar or whatever to make it taste good. To me, like that side of my palate I've always loved. I've always loved spicy food. And even if you don't like spicy food, just, you know, herbs and things like that, they were so creative with it there. And they had so many interesting ones that you never really got bored with just chicken or just shrimp because there was always something else to it. And I always thought that was really cool. So I really tried to bring that, you know, back with me.
I mean, and that is a cool thing because I don't know how many times, you know, you hear stories, if I have to eat one more chicken breast, if I have to eat one more egg white, you know. And I've been there where I've had that, you know, that final bite of scrambled egg and spinach, and I didn't know if it was going to stay down just because you get so tired of it. So knowing how to jazz up your food is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to flip the script here for just a second, and because during your time, and I know we're focusing mostly on Singapore, but it's, I mean, it just has a lot of good lessons to it. So you were in contest mode for about a year there between your two shows and your training and, you know, growing from bikini to figure and physique and, you know, all of those changes. So and that is definitely a mindset. It's a commitment on several levels, emotionally, mentally, physically. But then, you know, you and I were having a discussion earlier, and you said, you know, it took just as long to kind of get out of contest mode mentally and find that balance in just everyday life. Why don't you share with us a little bit about what that was like and, you know, how you finally did come to terms? I mean, right now you're not in contest prep and you're finally starting to live like you're not, but what was it like before you got to that point?
I could probably do an entire separate interview on just that topic alone. there's so much to it. So when I was competing, like I said, I got addicted to keeping that diet so that I could stay lean. I just like wanted to stay lean, and I was very lean for basically an entire year. I was contest ready for an entire year, which isn't probably the best thing to do, you know, for your body or for your mind for that matter. So it was really hard when I finally said, okay, I'm not competing anymore. Like after that last competition, I still felt like I had to be that person and I still had to stay so lean because that was how people knew me. They knew I was that girl. And so I felt I put this obligation on myself to keep doing that. And I kept convincing myself I was doing it, you know, because it was healthy and because this is the good food and not giving into temptation and all these kinds of things. But I was actually kind of, I knew I was sort of denying my own philosophy in a way, which, you know, my philosophy is, and always has been, even if I didn't directly follow it all the time, that any food that is whole, any food that is, you know, basically given to, I like to say, given to you from the earth, however you want to put it, is a good food. It doesn't have to be spinach. It doesn't have to be broccoli. It can be any vegetable. It can be any, you know, just be smart about it. That's all.
Yes.
And know what you're eating. But I was having trouble following that myself, and I stayed on the restrictive diet. I stayed on the quote-unquote competition diet, and didn't really falter from it, even after I was done competing, because I was scared to not be the competitor anymore. And it wasn't until I finished my contract in Singapore, I came home, and I was actually going down to Florida with two of my best friends. They were getting engaged, and we were going to spend a week going to, like, Disney World and Universal and all these things. Suddenly, I was in a position where I didn't have all my own food to prepare, and I wasn't able to eat every 3 hours. And I was like, oh. I tried to do it for the first couple of days we were there, and then I finally realized I just can't do that. I can't. It's not possible right now. I'm going to have to eat more in one sitting, and I may not be able to get exactly what I want, you know, in these meals when you're eating out at wherever you are in a park and whatnot. So that was – so in my mind, I was eating not well and not in the way that I wanted. But funnily enough, even though I was feeling not as on point and I wasn't really, you know, training at that during that week, but I was still getting comments from people about, you know, how I looked in a positive way. And even though in my mind I'm like oh no, I'm like out of shape right now, you know. Even, and I'm looking back, I'm like, I was crazy. I was, 1 week of doing this is not going to undo everything I just did for a year, 2 years, whatever it was. And it kind of started the light bulb process in my brain a little bit, just being forced to be in a situation where I couldn't do what I wanted to do. So I'm grateful for that, because then when I went on to do, that was when I started working for Carnival then, went on to my next cruise ship, I really was able to let go a little bit of being so mindful about exactly what I was eating. I stopped. I was in a position now where I couldn't weigh my food. You know, I had to trust my, I had to trust my instinct, what I knew about, you know, from all my experience, just trust myself and trust that I knew what I was doing. And I still tracked my food, like, and I still do to this day. I still keep, you know, track of what I eat, just because I want to make sure I'm getting enough of the things I need. But
yeah,
it's not meant to, but it's not meant to, I'm not doing it. Yeah, and I'm not, but it's. I think the big difference is the mentality of why you're doing it is what separates, you know, the healthy and the unhealthy way of doing it. Because I used to obsess over every single gram of carbs and everything. I've been there so much. And now I'm like, I'm smart about my food. And because of that, I've been able to finally, like I said, embrace that philosophy that I wanted to from the start, which is just eat good food, eat whole food, and your body will thank you. And I'm still training, and now I'm able to train harder than I was before because I have more energy. And
exactly,
I'm finally to a point where I'm like, I still have motivation to train. I'm training harder. I don't feel like food owns my life anymore. But it took time. It's mental, you know. And anything that's mental is gonna take you some time to adjust to.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a long time coming. I just sort of tried to implement, you know, quote unquote loosening up, but to me loosening up is still not even that. It's not like going and eating a whole cake kind of loosening up. It was like having a couple pieces of dark chocolate kind of loosening up, you know.
Yep.
But it's little,
but it brings,
it's little things. Yeah.
Yep. And it brings up such a good point that I think, you know, we either need to hear again or take note of it for the first time, but there are just so many aspects to, you know, this sport, and, you know, sometimes we get wrapped up in the journey there that we forget about what happens afterwards, you know, especially if
mm-hmm.
you're not, you know, thinking about your next contest, you know, or what do we do after that? I mean, yeah, you hear the horror stories
yeah.
also, people gaining a lot of weight,
oh, yeah.
boom, right away, and that happens too, but, you know, there's different levels of how people respond after they come off a show, different variations, you know, everybody responds differently, and
mm-hmm.
and a lot of it is the mental aspect of it and how it's, you know, impacts different people. So
yeah.
it's always good just to hear that, you know, it is a real thing, that you can become a little bit, you know, I don't know if obsessive is the right word, but, you know, just so entrenched
yeah.
in a mindset that it's hard to break out of it, because the mindset at the time wasn't bad, but, you know, at the end of the day, if getting back on that stage is not your end goal, then it's okay to step back and regroup and assume a lifestyle that, you know, is still healthy for you, but it's just not that grind
yeah.
of being show ready.
Yeah, I finally just had to tell myself, look it, if I want to compete again, I know how to get to that point. I know what it
mm-hmm.
what I would have to do because I've done it. You know, I know what it takes. So, you know, just knowing that you're capable of it, having done it once or twice, or in my case, four times, you know what it takes. So I try to when I was first trying to sort of revert away from competing, I tried to keep telling myself that. I'm like, if I ever want to do it again, I know how to do it. So don't freak out, you know. But I think in terms of, yeah, seeing people who struggle with post-competition and things like that, I think a lot of that comes, it has to, when you decide to compete, it has to be for the right reasons, I think, is what it kind of boils down to. And I'm not discounting, I think anybody who competes, you know, I applaud them, and it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of ambition, and I think it's fantastic, you know, anybody who competes. But in terms of being able to handle competition, to do it multiple times, or to handle the post-competition, yeah, you really have to be doing it for the right reasons. And,
yeah.
you know, the fact that my reason was because I liked the healthier eating and I liked, you know, the idea of increasing my strength, those were the reasons I wanted to try to compete. I wasn't gunning for, like, it as a super weight loss motivator or anything like that, you know. So, which, again, there's nothing wrong with that as long as your mind is in the right place going into it.
Yep. And that's an important aspect. So, Mr. Kalin, do you have any final questions for Sarah?
Well, no, I just want to applaud her for basically coming to terms with herself in so many avenues. My goodness, I mean, the things that can be heaped on you all at once and you still accommodate it and have your sanity at the end, that's applaudable. Because, you know, like I said, I appreciate your humble nature, but I've seen people crack off of just moving, much less
yeah.
moving, new job, diet, culture. I mean, you just name it, especially in this drama-driven, and you figure you have to be a character in your life on stage and still remember to keep your sanity off of it. So I'm just, like I said, I wanted you on the show more than you know, because people need to hear that you can have a life and still be fit, because it's like we have this either-or mentality, and it's getting to a frightening state, because it's not true. It's not reality.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Well, obviously.
Well, Sarah, it's been great having you tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on. I don't have a lot of people I get to talk to this stuff about, so I'm actually very happy to do it.
Well, we've loved talking you through your journey, and you know, I understand that competing is not again in your near future, but if you decide to jump back on that stage, you know, we wish you nothing but the best, and do let us know because we want to be watching for you and see how things go.
I will. You will definitely know. You'll be the first three
awesome.
People I know.
We better be. With that, before we wrap up, Kaylin, why don't you give us a little snippet of your show that's coming up next Tuesday?
Oh, wow, yeah. I was so wrapped up in this, and I forgot about that. We have the DFA Superstone, Vicky McCann. We're going to be talking to her and see what they're unfolding for the new year. Because, I mean, it's just so many things happening this year so fast. It's like, wow, you know, I'm really excited about that. And this would be our first international call because I remember when we spoke with Liam, he was actually in the States getting ready for a competition. And this time it'll be us here and she's over there. So that's going to be quite the challenge. And I'd be happy to have you join me on that.
Hey, that would be awesome. So when we say over there, where exactly are we talking? I'm sorry, did I put you on the spot?
No, I said
okay.
Great Britain.
Oh, Great Britain. Okay, sorry, I didn't quite hear that. For a minute there, I was going to be like, oh, no, he doesn't know where over there is.
No, and the phone didn't drop. And that didn't drop.
You sure didn't, and it wasn't on you. Uh-oh.
What? Did I put somebody on the spot?
Oh, shoot. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, the background was taken care of. So, next Tuesday, Kaylin, we're going to hear from the DFAC all the way from Great Britain. So, on behalf of Miss Sarah, P for P Muscle, Kaylin, and myself,
thank you, Sarah.
If your body is a temple, let's build it.